This episode is brought to you by R1 RCM, a leading provider of technology-driven solutions that transform the financial performance of hospitals, health systems, and medical groups. R1 delivers proven, scalable operating models that power sustainable improvements to net patient revenue while reducing operating costs. To learn how you can build a future-ready revenue cycle today, visit us at www.r1rcm.com/Beckers.
Hello and welcome to the Beckers Hospital Review podcast. My name is Will Riley from R1 RCM. I'm joined today by two members of the team at Opus V. First, Caitlin Miktic, and second, Julie Deloya. Caitlin and Julie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you all.
Would you introduce yourselves? Caitlin, would you go first?
Yeah, of course. I'm Caitlin Miktic, VP of Business and Workforce Development at Opus V, formerly DHG or Dignity Health Global Education.
And I'm Julie Deloya. I'm the Chief Academic Officer at Opus V.
Thank you both. Caitlin, why don't you kick us off? What is Opus V? You mentioned a name change.
Yeah, we actually rebranded today. We are formerly Dignity Health Global Education. Really, we're dedicated towards the healthcare workforce. Opus V is the Latin term for workforce. Really, we focus on our commitment to scalable workforce solutions for the healthcare workforce, eradicating healthcare staffing shortages across the board, filling education gaps through digital professional development.
Excellent. So on the podcast, we've been talking about some of the big issues facing healthcare providers going into 2024. Maybe what we can do is look at some of those challenges, look at it through the lens of workforce development and education. One of the big areas that we're talking about, that we've been talking about and thinking about, is the relationship between payers and providers and that contracting, that intense contracting situation that's happening. What role does workforce development play in that? Caitlin?
Yeah, I mean, workforce development has a multifaceted approach to payer relations with hospitals. Certainly, reimbursements are always within discussion. But just for a more granular example of how workforce development plays a part is really understanding social determinants of health within the community, how payers are evaluating those, how large portions of the payer workforce are evaluating those different determinants, and where workforce development comes in is really standardizing that for payers and providers across the board. So everyone is not only understanding the competencies the same way, but also grading them the same way. That has to do with reimbursements across the board. That has to do with grant funding and reimbursement models for all of those initiatives tied into one.
We see a lot of conflict in that relationship right now. Is workforce development a way of ironing out some of that conflict and finding common ground?
Yeah, I mean, I think there will always be conflict within that space, but I do certainly think that workforce development can play a key part.
Julie, turning to you, why is workforce development such an important topic now, 2 years after the pandemic? What's happening to make it so relevant?
Even before the pandemic, workforce development was important because you know, if you haven't been in to see your physician or hospital for a while, everything changes pretty quickly. Technology and informatics and electronic medical records. So we were already on this trajectory of increased technology and information and overload, et cetera. And then boom, the pandemic hits, making things that much worse. Your patient population has now changed. You've got greater acuity with patients. So they're coming in with more complicated and a mix of diagnoses. You've got nurses that are coming out of nursing school who were trained on the pandemic. They didn't get as much exposure to that, you know, the experience where you get that, create that clinical judgment. You open up Beckers at any moment and you see, you talk about workforce shortages. So now you've got this stressed population of nurses going in, they have more difficult patients. Odds are their patient loads have gone up. That's very stressful. So you have to support the nurses, the medical assistants, the CNAs, I'd even say the administrators, because they're also going through a lot of challenges. And it's important when you think about why people leave. A lot of times they just don't feel supported. So if I can show you that I'm willing to create some customized learning for your specific need, and we're going to meet you where you are, because you have a bad schedule. We know this. So we've got to have flexible learning. It's got to be accessible. And then we find ways to pull people together. I mean, I'm a diehard educator. To me, education is safe space. And so it's got to be an environment where people can talk about their workforce challenges in a safe space and be able to spitball, challenge each other, learn from each other. And it's just to create that nurturing, supportive environment. And you're also learning a lot too.
Cool. So that's great. So Caitlin, maybe turning to you, can you give some examples of like some of the programs that Julie was just mentioning and introducing? We know that clinician burnout is a big deal. We know that it's hard to retain those folks at the moment in the profession. So give some examples of some of the programs that you've seen being successful.
Yeah, of course. I think two examples come to mind. For clinician burnout, you had just mentioned, one thing that really that we have heard time and time again from organizations needing our support within workforce development for clinicians is really making them more business savvy. So many different clinicians are happy and comfortable clinically by the bedside, but really they're hoping within themselves, and their organizations are also hoping after the pandemic, business is a need too. So really building that business acumen is very helpful, not only for the burnout, but really just to change their lens as they deliver care and sort of hone in on that skill. I think the second population, and obviously the largest population within the healthcare workforce, is always the nursing. Julie had just touched on aspects of retention within the nursing workforce. If you're really supporting through education those new grad nurses coming out of college to help them be retained within the system that they begin in, they also are then supported by preceptors, which are experienced nursing leaders, and really delivering a learning experience through the digital atmosphere that we provide at Opus V helps everything. What do you want to say? Like run symbiotically, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really at their fingertips. We hear from nursing leaders all the time. They can access our courses at the tip of their fingers, right? We hear from medical assistants or certified nursing assistants.
Always mobile friendly.
Yeah, those entry level staff. Staffing roles like CNAs or medical assistants are taking our education on their transportation home, right? They don't drive, they have public transportation, and they have 2 hours to really dedicate to developing themselves. So those are just a few examples, but yeah.
Yeah. What role, Julie, perhaps turning to you, what role does workforce education play in, how do you align it with the mission of the organization? Because I would have thought that that's a really important thing to do to make
it land. You're absolutely right there, right? So whenever we create any solution, we always have focus groups. And sometimes, you know, people come to us like they have a vague idea of a need. And so part of our job is to really push them by questioning them. What are their pain points? What is it they're hoping to achieve? And what is it that's important to get out? And I don't remember ever when people said mission is not important. So I was like, all right, mission is important. What does that look like in this job role? What would that? And so we build that into the curriculum as far as reinforcing the mission of an organization. Because again, you're trying to create an environment where people feel comfortable, nurtured, and supported. The mission is key to that. You're absolutely right.
Perfect. Question to either of you. We've talked a little bit about sort of clinically oriented programs, helping nurses get established and so on. What about on the administrative side of healthcare? We started off talking a little bit about payers and reimbursement models and so on. But what role does education play on that side of the equation?
I think the biggest example, Will, that comes to mind in the non-clinical space is really filling skills gaps, right? All of our healthcare systems are becoming even more lean, where the systems are faced with really difficult challenges to cut roles. But that means that teams are smaller and expected to really deliver on the same principles. So skills gaps do come up. Project management in healthcare, healthcare analytics, just different roles that are no longer able to be delivered in a siloed way. You have one or two individuals taking on those projects from initiation to execution that did not do before this. So,
and I was a successful system. Those aren't separate. And one of my favorite programs is we trained all the chief medical officers from a particular system in basics, basically business management, human capital, conflict negotiation, budget management, et cetera. So these were clinicians who were having roles that were incredibly important for the health of the hospital, but also for the health of their division.
Got it. I'd like to ask about how education is delivered in 2023, 2024. On the administrative side, many of the employees of the health system are still working from home. That's become a sort of a model. So you've got a distributed workforce, certainly on that side. Whether you're on the administrative side or the clinical side, you're really busy. So how do you fit training in? How do you think about delivering technology in a way that people are going to consume it? And
so as a lifelong educator,
yeah,
it's always, who's the learner? How do you connect with them? Because I can't teach you a single thing. You need to want to learn something, right? So I need to know who you are, what your circumstances are, and what matters to you. And then we build the curriculum around that. We are, technology is our main force, right? But we also do add-ons as well. So we have a very dynamic discussion board. We actually gamify that. Being a little bit older in the tooth, I thought that was kind of a little goofy. Learners love it because it really gets them interacting. We have analytics that we can look at everyone in the class and say, all right, these people are really interacting. We see this web of interactions. It's like, we have one person here who's an outlier. Let's go check and see what's going on with him. It's got to be flexible. We're working with nurses. Their schedules, are generally 3:10s or whatever. Or they get called in. So it's digital first, asynchronous to a point. We keep them marching along. We provide ways for them to interact with one another. And then depending on the program, like the program I was talking about with the division chiefs, they wanted to bring them together once in a while. So we actually helped them develop working sessions where they brought people from all over the state to meet, and we helped them with the education aspect of that. So again, you have to listen to your client, know the who's learning and what you're trying to get out of it. And then you work to design that curriculum.
Got you. Caitlin, what are some of the big priorities for health systems as they think about their educational agenda in 2024? Where are you seeing them want to focus?
I think that the priority will always lie within where the margins are the tightest, whatever role that is, and really narrowing down on that role specifically to support them. So we've mentioned nurses already. I've heard a lot from systems now, just really thinking about post-acute care. So senior living, what does really dual training look like so that your staff are not only trained in acute settings, but they can also transition or rotate between post-acute settings, right? So just thinking strategically about those transitions in 2024 have been coming up the most.
Got you. Julie, what's your perspective?
Yeah, again, it's always about what the client needs, but we can look at some trends some of the things that I'm very keen to think about going forward is home health. I think that's going to blow up in the next couple of years, especially as, that gray tsunami is coming.
Uh-huh.
And healthcare, acute care was hit hard. Post-acute care was hit even harder. There's simply not enough caretakers and not enough beds. We have to be creative about that. And part of that is just not only about the systems themselves, but now we're talking about community health. We're talking about working with families, doing some education and support within the home, which to me is very exciting.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, one thing we haven't mentioned really is just that regulatory landscape as well. And just as guidance comes out from a regulatory standpoint, what does that look like? Whether it's implicit bias training for nurses or substance abuse disorder requirements across the board. Really, those are coming from a state and local lens.
And sometimes federal.
Yeah, and sometimes federal every year, right? So adapting to those
DEA requirements for training.
Yeah, we've been talking on the podcast about how health systems can keep up with regulation, and training is part of the answer there, right?
Yeah, certainly is.
Yeah. And how do you keep up with that? Because like you said, there is this patchwork of regulation that you're dealing with. You've got a lot of federal, but an awful lot of local. changes as well.
In my former life, I actually had to deal with accreditation for clinical programs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of my role is to know state by state. It's like, if we're going to do an MA program, what are the differences between the state of Washington and the state of Texas, right? As my job to know that and make sure that we meet the standards for that.
Got you. Awesome. It's been lovely talking to you both. Thank you so much for introducing us to your work and the priority. Caitlin, Julie, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you.
Thank you.